had my radio set on a rap station. Saw a girl in trouble, a sticky situation. She wanted me to give her mouth to mouth resuscitation.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another riveting edition of This Week in Mormons, your favorite show that discusses current Mormon topics throughout the world. I'm your co-host, Jeff.
And I'm Al, and we guarantee your satisfaction or your money back.
That's right, because we do cost money.
That's right. You think this is free. Well, just like NPR, we need millions of dollars to run this podcast. Not really, just kidding.
No, it's true. The equipment I have is worth upwards of $2.3 million that I use to make this. I think that's evident in the audio quality of the production that we put out. I
would know. Yeah, well, a little hum on my end, but sure.
What on earth was that? Was
it
that
sounds the furnace? Like, it sounds like $2.3 million worth of equipment.
Was that the furnace?
No, sir. No, sir.
Okay. I'm excited about the potential for the furnace, as we discussed earlier.
Yeah, I'm recording this in a basement, and the furnace has been known to kick on at very inopportune times, like during conference calls and stuff like that. So, as the laws would have it, I'm sure at some point during this podcast it'll happen. It's like when you're on your mission and you're buried your testimony, like the most important point of the lesson, and all of a sudden it's like the dog starts barking, the phone's ringing, the TV explodes, and then like all of a sudden, urine is flying out of the toilet back into the kitchen. You're like,
hello.
What is happening? How did this? You're like, and I know. And they're like, oh my gosh, hold on, hold on. I'll be right back. You're like, wait, I was right there. Dang you, Satan.
There it is.
It's true.
You're true. So, Al, how's life? How you doing, buddy?
Life is fantastic. It's really good. I went to my first multi-stake YSA dance in what has to be 4 years.
Why do you do this to yourself?
It was great. I was surrounded by a bunch of freshmen, college freshmen, and we danced the night away. And it's interesting. It's interesting because at some point, like the filter on the music became irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, as you're in youth dances and stuff, it's like you have to get approved and you have to have like a golden signature from some man somewhere to get a song on a playlist.
You have to have a golden ticket.
And what happens is it ends up being the exact same playlist for like years on end.
Yeah.
and so you have that, and then all of a sudden you turn into YSA and it's like, yeah, we don't even bother editing the songs. We'll just put them on there.
I think it's appalling, actually, when you go to dances. And even if there isn't, say, specific language, there is still clearly suggestive material. And the subject, you know what I mean? Like, if there's not profanity, but the subject matter, you just stand there like, do you know what this song is about, DJ?
We had the highlights where we had the... I think there's a Britney Spears song about threesomes or something. There was a Kanye West Gold Digger that was unedited, brilliant. And, you know, like several, which had like, well, so the DJ kept getting on. He's like, sorry if I offended anybody with that one. Let's mix it up with this. And I'm like,
And then that was when he played his remix of Kurt Bester's Greatest Hits.
And it was actually... No, never mind. I can't say that. So anyway, it was
it was an
entertaining time, and it was a luau. So I mean, if that's not recipe for magic, I don't know what is.
You are living the dream, sir.
Which a luau to anybody not in Hawaii is
wow,
like rice with coconut and pineapple. That's all you need, and it's like, yeah, we're Hawaiian. That's what we're doing. But it's so sad to be. In a singles program where it's just, oh my gosh, it's people trying so hard, so hard. We had a guy show up in like a cow costume, and I'm just like, are you really trying? You just want to be noticed? I mean, what's the motivation here? Because no girl's going home with a cow with rubber udders sticking out the front of him.
Now, was this your first dance since that jungle themed one that you and I went to?
Yes,
it was 2 years ago or so.
The Welcome to the Jungle.
The Welcome to the Jungle Dance. Now, I'm going to paint a picture for our listeners, if you will, that this was a jungle-ish themed dance. I believe it encompassed, I don't know what, just the North County region, wherever we were, however many wards were invited. So we all went in a big group. And now I recall I went with Al. We went to an interesting local thrift store, vintage store, to find clothing. And
well, because it was jungle themed, and so we needed
it was jungle themed. So I settled on. I found some ugly old man brown slacks and this weird palm tree golfing shirt and this leopard print vest. It all clashed wonderfully, and I embraced it. And I thought it was good enough, and most people were along those lines, either wearing, you know, matching safari outfits or painting their faces or dressing like tigers. Aldo chose a bit more of a personal approach, something far more illustrative and loaded with metaphor. Al was wearing these tight and high water, definitely, they were way too short for you, high water pastel yellow pants that were to symbolize the sun. The sun over nature.
Or wheat.
And his shirt, though, which was the piece de resistance, was this, how do we even describe it? It was blue and shiny. I forgot. It had
Lionel Richie inspired.
But they were they were sort of like threads on it, right? That's what shined. Yeah. It wasn't sequins.
And that was complemented by my temple shoes, which was probably the most action those white bad boys have ever gotten.
Yeah, which represented the clouds, maybe?
Probably, yeah. Well, and everyone would be like, how is this jungle themed? And then I would just pull the shirt apart and show my bare chest and say, welcome to the jungle. And I'd say two or three people appreciated the genius that was that costume, and everybody else was just offended.
That costume was absolutely, it was brilliant. And see, the great thing was, I mean, let's be honest, Al, you were BSing that as we went along. I mean, we bought the outfit because it looked hilarious, and we're like, yeah, let's just do it. Who cares? And then it worked out that it was the sun and the rain. I think you didn't say it was the sky. It was the rain.
That's right.
And then your shoes, your white temple shoes.
Oh, they were joyous things.
I remember our bishop came up to you, and he's like, wow, where'd you get the white shoes?
It's like,
and you're like, actually, these are my temple shoes from when I was
distribution center.
And the bishop looks at you, kind of shakes his head, and walks away.
Well, so if you can't tell by the prolonged rhetoric here, there's not a lot of news happening in the
Stop it.
World
there's
this
plenty
week.
Of news here. More news. Speaking of dances, there was apparently a mid-singles conference in Orange County this weekend. So hopefully all of you who went had a wonderful time with people ages 25 to infinity. Dancing the night away, doing mid-singles things.
So sketchy, man. It's so sketchy. Because there's no middle. The middle-aged crowd, like in between the brackets, never show up. It's a bunch of 25-year-olds and a bunch of 50-year-olds. Or like a YSA dance. It's a bunch of 18-year-olds and a bunch of 30-year-olds.
Well, bear in mind, these they do a reasonably good job because there are many mid-singles that are more in the realm of 25 to early 30s, and they do a decent job of keeping to that demographic for all these activities. So,
I'm so ashamed of myself. But I wanna. There's a cute tall girl here at this last activity we went to.
Oh, really?
I walk up to her. Well, because I couldn't decide if she was like 23. Or 18. So I walk up, I'm like, hey, what's your name? She's like, Rebecca. I was like, how old are you, Rebecca? And she's like, 19. I was like, okay, thanks. I just
Love
walked
it.
Away. I was
Don't
like,
just.
I was like, that's it, we're done. Sorry.
That does remind me some point, if you feel like waxing more personal, about another story where you just awkwardly walked away from a girl with whom you were on a date at one point in time.
Wait, I'm what? Sure.
You know the one I'm referring to, sir.
No, when was this? What was this?
It involved you touching someone's nose with one of your digits.
Yeah, that was. Well, we can't do that over podcast. We'll have to do a video sometime.
Or some. It is perhaps one of my favorite dating stories ever. So,
miss you.
You're a brilliant man. Well, folks, let's dive into it. Let me give you a brief overview of what we have to talk about today. Because Al said there wasn't much to discuss, but let's say what little there is to discuss is of great importance.
It's
so
true.
The wonderful thing that we have here is that the church has announced the dedication dates for the Kyiv Ukraine Temple.
Dude, don't take my thunder.
That's all. That's the story.
you can have it.
And we'll get more into that, but this is exciting news for both Al and myself. I feel kind of awkward that I get to be enthusiastic about it because Al has far greater reason. But either way, great story. Then we're going to go on to Larry King, a modern-day Hugh Hefner. And Glenn Beck is speaking at a Christian university that doesn't necessarily want him because he is, quote-unquote, not Christian. And also, believe it or not, according to U.S. News and World Report, BYU is now the most popular school in the United States.
Who knew?
I'm serious. It is.
Okay.
Al, so, please take us to this fanciful world of Northern Slavs, Eastern Slavic languages, post-communist states, and how the gospel has spread there. Please.
So imagine the real Ukrainian selo, or village, as some would say, of wheat fields and blue sky, much like my costume at the jungle-themed dance of yesteryear. Actually, in 1998, the Kyiv Temple was announced.
Yeah.
Which was a while ago. So 12 years it took to go from announcement to actual building. But huge news because it's been... So they've been working on it. They got the Moroni put up on the steeple not too long ago. Well...
Like a couple weeks. It was a little while ago, yeah.
8 months ago, I think?
No, it was far less than that. A couple of months ago.
Okay, a couple of months. Well, and I'll post a video about it. But it's been big, like, making milestones. I served my mission there in 2001 to 2003.
Holla.
And don't mean to date myself there or anything, but so we were there, and they finally, right at the end of my mission, they picked out the temple site in Nivki. Which is a region of Kyiv up, I think it's...
Southwestern Kyiv, right?
Yeah.
That's what I remember. It's on the edge of town. It's over on one of the main ring roads.
Well, so then we traveled back there in 2005 or 2006 and saw that they had the stake center almost built and were laying the footings for the temple.
May I interject here? I went there as well, and I saw this stake center. It was wonderful. That's all. I just wanted to...
So we've both seen it.
And I just wanted to be a part of the fun.
It was lovely. The great thing about... So the cool thing about this, the significance here, is that Eastern Europe is kind of the last area of the world that didn't have a stake and did not have a temple.
Once again, sir, question. May I please interject?
Yes, please.
Perhaps you're familiar with what's called the Islamic world?
Yeah, the Islamic world has temples and all that stuff already.
Eastern Europe because of communism, while Christian, did not have the gospel for a long time. So it's one of the few main Christian areas that did not have a strong church program.
Right.
Let's say that.
So, if you're going to chop it up into chunks, you've got Africa. Africa's got some temple stuff going on. So
that's true.
We could cut the corners however we want. You know, if there were four corners of the earth, we could argue it. You know, maybe we need one in Northwest Territories, Canada, before we'll be done. Who knows?
It's all about Nunavut.
So anyway, we were like, the closest temple from Kyiv was Germany.
It was in Freiburg, right? That was their temple forever.
Yeah, which is like a 38-hour drive via bus for these people. So this is huge for them, and this will serve... from Moscow, like, I think most of Russia.
I think probably not St. Petersburg, because they're so close to the Helsinki temple, I don't know.
4 hours from it, so they're fine. Yeah. But this will serve Eastern Europe primarily and all the way out to, you know, like through Kazakhstan and all that. So,
and a lot of Southern Europe, too, is my understanding. Most of, I don't know how this will change once the Rome temple gets built, but I believe most of the Balkans now will go to the Kyiv temple. I don't know where the line will be drawn, because you might have somewhere, you know, like, Slovenia or whatever. I don't know if they would bother to go all the way over to Ukraine. I don't see why they would when they could just go to Switzerland or Frankfurt. But
yeah, that wouldn't make much sense.
But it covers a lot of a huge spread now, so it's great. It's going to be dedicated.
It was a strategic announcement, I think, back in the day that Kyiv would get one, just geographically, and so finally, 12 years later, you know, it's taken a lot of kind of blood, sweat, and tears to get to the point where we are now, obviously. My mission president, or the second one that I had, one of his specific instructions was to, you know, he was a construction man by trade, and they brought him over there to specifically get the ball rolling on the temple. And so I think there's close to 20,000 members in Ukraine right now. So this is going to be a huge boost for that area, for the work there.
Yeah.
And so this is exciting. So the open house is the 7th through the 21st of August. Dedication is the 29th, and the first day of ordinances is the 30th.
Yeah.
So awesome. Can't wait.
It's going to be great.
I'm booking tickets to go out there tomorrow. Well, I'm booking the tickets tomorrow to go out in August, and I'll be staying with some old friends out there, which will be great. Very excited. I'm just super stoked to go back and finally see. You know, even for me, it's been 7 years, and so to go from what I was working on when I was there to actually having a temple, there's a stake established there now. I mean, it's like it's leaps and bounds from where it was. So very cool. Congratulations to Ukraine. Can't wait to get out there and see that sucker. It's going to be awesome.
And huge congratulations. Now I get to speak from a bit of a different point of view, of course.
Please.
Now, for those of you who don't know, we can give a little backstory here, I suppose, can't we?
I permit.
Al and I met, our friendship started in 2006 when both of us participated in a program through BYU. Actually, that was based in Kyiv, Ukraine, and it was all political research, this and that kind of stuff.
On the Orange Revolution. Yep.
Yeah, that's what we chose to do. Yeah, there were different groups that worked on different projects. The irony, of course, if you remember how much we thought ours was going to be the worst thing ever, there were three different things. One was about, I think, religious freedom, and they worked with a scholar through the university, and there were a handful that chose to do that.
And then the other one was
about
law.
It was judicial reform and law stuff with some sort of NGO that a guy who used to be the attorney general in Juab County started. Remember, he visited us in Provo? And because he visited us, this sounded like the thing to do. Like 12 people signed up for that. And there was joy when, let's not pretend, when we found out they were basically just making copies and writing stuff. And then we chose four of us,
and
Al and two other guys, to do a project geared about the relatively then recent Orange Revolution, the Democratic Revolution in Ukraine. But they never secured a scholar or facility for us. So at first we were told that we could just do our own project. Now, at first we were kind of, I remember all four of us were like, this stinks. Like, what are we going to do? But as time went on and we realized that we had the chance to create a complete thing all on our own, I believe it was far more satisfying. I don't know about you, Al. But,
well, and we set up our own work schedule. So we're like, let's work for 2 hours. And then we'll be
awesome.
Done.
And then I remember there was some backbiting from the other groups, especially the big giant law group, because they thought we were goofing off every day after class when we would just head over and get lunch. Because we basically just did working lunches. We'd get our lunch and then plan.
Oh, we'd go sit and chill in Tano's and open up the laptop.
Oh, I miss Chilentano's. Yeah, we'd go to Chilentano's or the Puzata Chata or a wide array of wonderful eateries in Kyiv. Because what we decided to do was to create a survey, a sample, and do a sampling research methodology thing.
This is a lot of backstory, Jeff.
Yeah, sorry. So anyway, a lot of fun. So Al and I met there, and that's how we became friends. It just so happened we lived by each other. We lived with different Ukrainian families while we were there, and we happened to have to take the bus together and the metro every day to get into town. So just over time, you know, it was just kind of, we just spent like all day every day together, and that's how we became buddies. So for me, it was fascinating to go to Ukraine because I'd never been there. I love the opportunity, and it's amazing to see how well the church has done there. I know I don't want to embarrass Al, but I swear every single person I met in the local ward there was like baptized by Al. I swear everyone I met knew you somehow. But it was amazing. The church there was so strong. The stake was, I don't know, how old was the stake at that point in 06?
The stake was 2 years old.
Okay. So the stake was a couple of years old. I thought the organization was great. It felt like the bishops knew what it meant to be a bishop. I know they've had their struggles, though. You know, it's like any stake does in a growing church. But it was amazing to see the devotion and the faith of those members. And especially, not to knock Spain, the place of my mission, but I felt like this place where the church was so young, where it was in its first generation. There were no second-generation members at this point. The church was had only been there for 14 years when I was there, you know?
Yep.
And I see the faith and the organization of those members was amazing. And I never saw anything like that on my mission in Spain. And at that point in Spain, people are on third, possibly fourth-generation members of the church. But you just didn't see it. It was fascinating, and it was great, yeah, when we got to see the temple site, which even when we were there, they still had not announced anything. You know more than I do because you were on your mission, but I remember we met with the current mission president. You remember that night? yep. when we were there.
President and Davis, I think.
President Davis. And he talked a lot about it. I remember we asked him about the temple, and he said, as far as I know, we have all the permits and everything necessary. We're basically just waiting on the go-ahead from the Lord, like for the church to say, yeah, they're ready, build it,
yep.
which I thought was fascinating. So it was great. I think it's been about 2 years, right, was it since when we saw that they broke ground on the temple. And that was just a great day for everybody to say that they finally decided to build it, and now to see the growth of the church there. It seems to me that the Lord has big plans for Ukraine, because having been there, I was amazed at the infrastructure and the investment the church was making in it. You know, just from the facilities, like the Central Institute building and the church building where we'd go for class and this and that. Everything was very high quality and very well done.
Oh, well, you think about it. I mean, there's so much opportunity for growth in Russia, Ukraine,
definitely,
Kazakhstan, like all the stands all around there. I mean, there's so much opportunity because they're open to you know, proselyting and religions now after the fall of the Soviet Union, and so it's like it's relatively young still, and the opportunity's there. We don't have the membership infrastructure to really build it out into the into those areas and turn those into kind of centers of strength, or really even take the gospel to areas. I had experiences on my mission where we had to go and teach people the gospel, and they would want to, you know, be baptized, join the church, and we had to say no, you know, we can't yet because we can't get out to where you are.
Wow.
And so, you know, just the idea that there's still places where even if you want to join the church, you can't because we don't have the infrastructure there. That's mind-boggling to me, especially coming from like a very Western America type place where, you know, there's no place. Even you could even be in Wyoming and join the church. I think not positive on that, but probably. But
probably.
You go to an Eastern European country, and if you're not in one of the, like if the if you're not in one of the major
city,
hubs, yeah, you're pretty much hosed. And so building out or putting a temple there where it's going to get some of the enthusiasm and the inertia behind it, the momentum behind the growth, really, I mean, this is huge, huge deal. So anyway, enough reminiscing, I guess, but gosh, it's exciting.
It is really exciting. I know it's exciting in a personal way for you more so than for me, but even I'm excited because I feel a special affinity for Ukraine, definitely.
Well, and, dude, we had such a great situation with that because Professor Biddulph,
Dr. Biddulph,
originally opened Ukraine. He was the very first mission president there, and he's the foremost political scientist in the world, I think, was his recognition for the Ukrainian politics coming from like a Western professor, right?
Definitely.
So he's a very prominent professor in that, and we just got to hang out with old Biddulph all the time.
Old Howard, and we could tell you some great stories. Something's happening. Do you remember that one?
Oh, he had his cell phone start ringing.
Ringing in his pocket, vibrating, and he's just kind of this guy who you'd be amazed if he has anything better than dial-up internet in his house. It's that kind of thing, and his cell phone just starts buzzing in his pocket, and he honestly didn't know what it was.
He looks straight ahead and just says, something's happening to my body.
Something's happening, and we're sitting there just busting up, trying not to laugh as hard as we can in the class. Anyway, enough reminiscing, but I love seeing that in Ukraine because the church has just been so strong there. I mean, it hasn't even been there for 20 years yet, and they've got a temple, and that's awesome.
Way to go.
More power
for the win.
For the win. This is definitely the biggest story of the week for me, and I'm so happy for everyone there. And I've heard the inside of the temple will have, it will be styled in traditional Ukrainian ways in many places. Like the same styles you put on pasta eggs and all that kind of stuff. So.
Oh yeah, maybe as we go in, everybody can take a bite of a big loaf of bread.
Yes, there will also be a lot of syrniki and anyway,
cheese things. Yes.
Let us go away then from the uplifting and the holy, and move on to the affairs of Larry King, which I think this is a brief story. Apparently, Larry King, who many of you know, is married to an LDS woman who I believe is Sean Southwick, and it's been a good thing because Larry King apparently has a pretty he seemed to have a very chummy relationship with President Hinckley, and he seems to have respect for the church, which is nice because it's nice to have somebody that can, you know, swing for us or be on our side with stuff. This honestly does surprise me because it seemed like a pretty good deal. There are now allegations that Larry King is having an affair with his sister-in-law Shannon Engelman.
Now Now, she's a very good-looking woman, by the way. And I don't know if the newsworthy part of this story is that he's having an affair with a... Yeah, well, because, you know, they're all Mormons, so that's how we're tying this in. I don't know if the news is that he's having an affair with a Mormon. Or that he's just still... that he's having an affair. I mean, this is Larry King.
You mean that Larry King is still virile? You mean that?
Yes! Attaboy! I mean, boo for the affair, but... I didn't know. I thought the suspenders were like a woman repellent. I had no idea that you could still get women while wearing the Larry King outfit and having the Larry King do with the Larry King glasses. I mean, the fact that that man is still even in the batting lineup is, well, newsworthy, I say.
Yes, but you see, Larry, when you have money, you can get anything you want. It's a sad world, but it's true. I mean, he has allegedly bought her gifts and a $160,000 car.
Well, to her, we say it's not worth your salvation.
It's not. Yeah, I mean, come on. You're giving the church a bad name. You're a Mormon actress and singer. You look more like a dirty actress and singer.
You tell her, Jeff.
Than a Mormon one. I am ashamed. I would not take you out on a date.
I would take you to a very popular restaurant.
I would take you to a fireside.
I would say,
Shannon, remember who you are. Don't forget yourself. Don't forget your ancestors. Don't be like Simba. Get it back in there.
Shannon.
You do not need a baboon. No, I'm not going to keep going with the Lion King.
Okay. Analogy. Yeah. So, Larry King, what are you doing?
Shame on you.
Moving on. Glenn Beck has been invited. Glenn Beck, as we are notoriously known around here, we are not Glenn Beck lovers. We try to give him a fair scoop, but in the end, he kind of comes out sounding goofy. I went to dinner tonight at a family's house that had a picture of Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck up by their TV. And then like a really small picture of Jesus off to the side. It was kind of a disproportionate. Well, and I knew I was in for just a riveting dinner conversation, which I was, because I tend to play the liberal when I'm around a bunch of conservatives, and so it was entertaining.
You have to. It's fun.
But well, so anyway, Glenn Beck's been invited to give the commencement at Liberty University. And so there's a little bit of an uprising, kind of a, I don't know, maybe akin to a Richard Cheney speaking at BYU type of thing. But let me just throw out some of the quotes here, and then Jeff has something that he's going to say. So some of the quotes that leads out with, it's, in today's confusing times, we need clear biblical messages. By allowing Glenn Beck, a Mormon, to speak at Liberty University's commencement, Liberty's message becomes off focus. While Glenn Beck presents many factual presentations, again, I'm quoting, while Beck presents many factual presentations on his popular Fox News show, he should not be allowed to speak at a university that demands its students to believe that Jesus Christ is the only way of salvation. Just poppycock. That's what I'm saying to these guys. Oh, this is such ridiculousness that you would draw, you know, pick it at hairs here about this fellow Christian coming to say a prayer at your university. Obviously somebody who shares your views, perchance. I mean, you're both maybe crazy right wingers, or very passionate right wingers, I should say. So you share the same views. You're both Christian. The tenets are all the exact same all the way up your faith. How dare you try and discriminate and segregate the whole, you know, the Christian community. Come say a prayer at ours. We don't care where you're from. You know, Islamic, Jewish, Christian, Lutheran, whatever you want to call yourself. If you're going to come and pray, we encourage that. And the fact that this guy is, or well, it's actually, you know, somewhat of a movement is claiming that this somehow is wrong to let this happen, or will dilute a university's vision or focus. It's just stupid. So, Jeff, isn't there something you want to say? Jeff, isn't there something you want to say? Say it, Jeff.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Jeff, what do you want to say to
Glenn Beck? Glenn Beck is Beelzebub. That is what I want to say.
No, Jeff, we talked about this. Glenn Beck, Twim supports you?
No. What? No.
Glenn Beck, we say go and pray?
Glenn Beck, and he's
not praying at the Liberty University. Go.
He's not praying. He's delivering a commencement address.
Oh, pardon me. Pray or commence.
Glenn Beck, I will say this. Glenn Beck, Twim supports your right, or the propriety of you speaking to a Christian university because you should be recognized for being a Christian, which you are, even if Twim disagrees with some of your outlandish xenophobic rhetoric about a great many topics. You should be recognized for being a Christian because Mormons are Christian, and by the university or this school, Liberty University, getting on your case for being Mormon, which means you cannot possibly espouse Christian views, that is wrong, and I will not support that. And I will support anyone who goes to lengths to ensure that the world understands that Mormon theology is Christian theology. It might be expanded upon the traditional Christian theology, but it is Christian theology. So I will give that to you, Glenn Beck.
In essence, we support Glenn Beck. That's what we're trying to say.
In essence, Al supports Glenn Beck.
You just won't say it. Dang.
I support Glenn Beck's right to be recognized for the Christian that he is.
That's enough. I can get a sound clip out of that.
I do not support. You will splice nothing because it is I that does the editing and mixing for the show. You will do nothing. Nothing. You don't even know how a mixing board works.
It's true. Okay.
That's right. Well, folks, let's see over to... So, more power to free worlds of freedom, Glenn Beck. Freedom.
Las Vegas.
Freedom. Got to give what you take.
Hurry up, Jeff. Hurry up.
We're fine. Our listeners love hearing us say silly things. I mean, they're so excited just to hear our voice. Well, let's see here. This comes to us from U.S. News and World Report, also via the Mormon Times, Joel Campbell. There's going to be a bit of both in here about, like I said before, that apparently BYU is the most popular university in the nation. Now, before you scratch your head in disbelief and say, how could it be the most popular university in the nation when Mormons are one of the most maligned social groups in the nation? Well, they say popular, and it's supplanted Harvard. Harvard has been the most popular university in the nation based on U.S. News and World Report. The way they do this is just by saying the percentage of students, they say analysis of yield, so the percentage of students accepted to a school who then opt to attend, okay? So it's basically your attendance rate based on how many are actually accepted, because plenty of students get accepted to multiple schools and obviously only choose one. So it sounds kind of like it isn't too big of a deal, but when you are supplanting Harvard, which has the highest attendance rate, the highest analysis of yield like that, that is a decent thing. Good job, Brigham Young, to be that in demand that you have the highest percentage of students who choose to attend if they are accepted. Oh, it's at 78% of your students. Thank you very much. And it says three distinct groups of national universities tend to produce the highest yield. That's generally Ivy League, large state schools that are not renowned for their elite academics, but are a popular destination for their region, especially for athletic programs, which is, you know, University of Florida, University of Nebraska, stuff like that. Or then groups with religious ties. Those tend to be the ones that do well, according to this analysis. So, Al, how do you feel about BYU being so popular? And this means Provo. Actually, I don't know. It doesn't specify. This could mean all of BYU as a whole, all three of them.
Well, the great thing about BYU, in my opinion, is that it's
fry sauce.
Is what? No, not fry sauce. Heavens, no. I never got into fry sauce, but I attended BYU Hawaii, which was a fantastic choice for me. Where the honor code is more of a suggestion. No,
they're more really. Like guidelines and actual rules, right?
Well, like honestly, I had no idea that there was a curfew until I went to Provo to visit some friends, and they were like, "Oh, almost midnight, got to get home." And I was like, "What? What are you talking about?" It's not that we did anything bad in Hawaii; it's just that it was, you know, they stressed different things. But you know, the idea that it's the most popular, I have a hard time believing that. I can't imagine that more people that get accepted to BYU choose to go to BYU than if I got accepted to Harvard. There's probably a pretty darn good chance I'm going to Harvard. So I question the study just a little bit. Maybe their sample was a little bit off. But if it is the most popular, I have no idea how. Good on them. I'm not a huge fan of just hitting the BYU schools, but it worked for me. I don't think it's for everyone.
It's not for everyone. I enjoyed my time at BYU, but there are certainly criticisms to be had, and I could get on you for the honor code. By no means am I some like apostate or anything like that as far as following stuff, but let me illustrate something for you.
Please.
About the honor code. One time, this was 3 or 4 years ago, whenever I was at BYU, and I'd come back, I was watching a film at a house of a bunch of girls. They were just friends of mine, strictly a platonic endeavor, okay? And
I could see this happening.
It's true. I'm very good at being friends with girls, and I'm terrible at being their loving companion. So we watched a movie. It was Life is Beautiful, the Italian movie. You know,
oh, that's Holocaust. Wonderful.
It's a great movie. Now, if you're familiar with the movie, I'll get to this. You know how it ends? The tanks roll in from the Americans, they liberate the place, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, the stroke of 12 came, and at 12 o'clock, they said, okay, Jeff, you have to leave. Now, if you know where the movie is, this was at the point after the last night when the tanks have rolled in and the boy is just standing there. There's a grand total of, I don't know, what, 2 minutes more of movie at that point? Probably, in all seriousness. And I had to leave, and I was like, seriously? We can't just finish the movie. And it was my movie, too. I'm like, we can't just finish the movie, and I can leave in 2 minutes? And they said, no, you need to leave. And while I appreciated their devotion to the principles of the Honor Code, it made me think about the idea of the letter of the law and the spirit of the law was something like the Honor Code. For if I were to go stand on their porch, or on their little, you know, right there.
Oh, they'd
look,
be fine
and
with it.
I could stand there outside and watch the remainder of the movie, and that would be abiding by the letter of the Honor Code.
They're grooming Pharisees.
There would be no violation. But however, doesn't that kind of go against the spirit of it? I think the idea is to keep us out of trouble. And this is the same mentality when you have the same group of people that when midnight comes around, you see this all over BYU. Okay, well, I can't be here with my loved one anymore, so they go sit out on the porch
or in their car
and just make out. It's letter of the law versus spirit of the law, big time.
Oh, and BYU.
And I feel like the Lord has blessed us with an intellect and an understanding to know that the honor code is to help us live good lives and you know, keep ourselves in check and all these things, and that's fine. It does keep people from getting into situations. Obviously, if you are bent on going out and fooling around and doing whatever, you're going to do it regardless. But I'm sure it has helped in countless times to avoid potentially dangerous situations. But however, in a situation like this, doesn't it make one take pause and think? And think the idea here is letter or spirit. The spirit of the law would say this isn't a bad thing. We're just sitting here. No one is cuddling. No one is dating. We can finish 2 minutes of movie and then end the evening. And that would be fine. And the Lord gives us leeway on stuff like that. Like take, for example, on your mission. I was a zone leader at one point in my mission, okay? Were you ever a zone leader, Al?
I was not.
Okay, but were you ever a district leader?
No, never. I wasn't even a missionary. I was just a friend.
Okay. Okay, very good. Point is, I'm not saying this, but there are different responsibilities. Now, the same bedtime in my mission was 11 o'clock for everybody. But oftentimes as zone leader, did I wind up staying up past 11 because I had to take care of business or whether I had to do phone calls with the assistants or who knows what? I did. Nowhere in the mission manual does it say, here is the curfew, and there's an exception for zone leaders, but you have to work with what you have. We have to be pragmatic, and God expects us to be pragmatic.
See, when I was an angel on my mission, I was actually promoted to angel. I would just get everything done by 10:30, and It was amazing, but it would always happen. Then I was in bed, and I was actually asleep by 11. So,
what if,
I mean,
or I give you, when I had to ride trains back from Barcelona, I would often get home very late, and I would have to take a taxi in, and I would get
no,
home
no, no, no,
by
but
myself.
You keep one eye closed and retain your sleep status. You could ride the taxi. You're fine.
Yes, and therefore you are abiding by the letter of the law, and therefore you are completely holy. And
that's right.
Well, this has been a fun discussion about BYU.
The other thing that BYU got was 7th in the nation for graduates who get PhDs.
Which is impressive.
Now, my theory here is these are all singles that are graduating from a BYU, and they're reluctant to leave the Mormon Mecca because they're afraid they won't find anyone to love. So they just perpetuate their education and just keep finding classes to take and stay in. They're like, what, a master? Sure, I'll stay on for a PhD. So you have a bunch of 35-year-old single Mormons that don't want to leave there because they're sure they'll never get married. And so they just, you know, they just go on and get a PhD. It just happens. It just happens. They find some program. They're like, so then you have 6 years where you can say, no, I'm still in school. Yeah, I'm in school. Don't worry about how old I am, honey. I'm a student.
Well, I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Did no, you notice no rebuttal, Jeff?
None? I don't think it's a rebuttal. I think it's a brilliant theory, and I'll abide by it. I think it goes along with that. You do get a lot of foreign students who don't want to leave, and the only way to stay there is to extend their student visa by obtaining graduate education.
Let's keep learning,
and let's not knock that. Many people have
get as much education as possible. I mean, why ever work? Just student loans. I mean, if you can put off paying those until you're dying, then I see that as a success.
Well, I tell you what, now that I am facing the world of paying off student loans, specifically graduate loans, I see the allure in just being a student forever and just living off your loans.
Oh, yeah.
Forever and ever. Just keep getting more loans. What I don't know is I've heard different things as to whether or not loan debt actually rolls over to your loved ones when you die or if it gets forgiven. I've heard different things.
If I were your loved one, I would find a way for that to be forgiven. There is no way in heck I'd take your $80,000 loan and call that my own if you died.
It does seem kind of ridiculous, doesn't it?
It's like, no, Grandpa and me, we didn't get along so well.
Yes. Now, one last thing on this list of BYU. Now, look at the last one, the one that, of course, these are kind of funny. Okay. Here's one that BYU Public Relations don't want you to pick up. BYU is the 83rd most happy college in the country.
Ooh.
It reports that Claremont McKenna College is the happiest place, followed by Harvard.
Pomona?
Pomona
really?
College, by me, and Rice University. They're the happiest ones. BYU is 83rd. That is very, very interesting, and I know this is one study by one organization.
What would you suggest? Well, because I think I can attest to that. I don't remember it being an exceptionally happy place.
There's a lot of pretension. There's a lot of pressure
that they put on themselves. There's very little, you know. You go to a lot of these other universities, and the focus is on have fun, have a good time, and college is secondary. Well, if you show up at BYU, I mean, it's kind of the other way around. I know what you mean, for the crowds I would hang out with.
And fun is that BYUSA with their $250,000 budget is like, hey, there's free hot chocolate today.
I was never hanging out with the crowds that were putting together elaborate clue dates or scavenger hunts across the city that led to laundry rooms and tasers. But, I mean, maybe that's the fun part that I missed. All I saw was people with their nose in the book just trying to eke out an education.
Oh, Stetson, the example for my life.
If only we could all be like Evelyn, the Pillsbury Doughboy winner.
I tell you what, we have got to keep track of Evelyn and see what becomes of her.
She's in my alerts pool, so we'll find out.
Are you serious? Is she really?
Yes.
That's great. Let's see this course. And there's lower ratings after this for ratings of campus dining. These ratings come from campus dining, which sucks at BYU. Night light. I think it means to say night life, because why would your night light be rated?
His is a soft blue, obviously not as good.
The kids at Harvard are using halogen. They're much more forward thinking.
MIT wins.
Graduate indebtedness, which is high there. Freshman retention, total clubs, and sunny days.
Freshman retention could hurt too, because you get all the freshmen that show up and then go on a mission, right?
Yeah, but I wonder if they count it that way, because that would just be in no way fair if they count it that way. Because you get all, yeah, I mean, that's not fair. Total clubs, I could see, because the club organization is controlled by BYUSA, which holds the purse strings and basically just squeezes out anything that they don't like. And of course, BYU's nightlife is, well, you know.
I feel like we should become wealthy people and then go and fund random opposition clubs on BYU.
I would like that. That are off campus. And look, I mean, BYU's nightlife. Do you remember the nightlife there? Hey, let's go to Fat Cats. Hey.
No. The BYU nightlife was, hey, let's go to the malt shop, then play signs.
Hey, guys, I've got another idea. I bet if we walk for at least 4 blocks, someone will be watching either Hitch or National Treasure. The choice is ours.
And then we can play signs. Let's play more signs.
Yeah, they do really like signs there, don't they?
They love signs.
That is what you do at BYU. Go, the irony, it's like they do the same things you could do at somewhere like BYU Hawaii, but at least you can surf at BYU Hawaii, even though there's nothing in Laie. It's just, you know, it's a village, basically. Provo has over 100,000 people. There aren't good excuses for this anymore. Though there are, of course, the Scenester kids that live at Velour. And Velour is an exciting world of edgy indie kids.
Of tight jean-wearing, van-wearing hipsters. Crazies.
I wear tighter pants, and I wear Vans. Sometimes.
No, it's true. That's why I'm not surprised that you know what that
why
is.
Why do you? Of course, I know where Velour is.
I have no idea.
For someone like me who loves live music, you seek it as best as you can find, and you get burned out on having to drive to Salt Lake to see any good bands play.
Which, by the way, Jeff, I saw the Avett Brothers this week. Great show.
They are a great band.
Yeah, fantastic.
I'm impressed with you. I saw a great band. I'm going to give them a shout out on here right now. They're a local band called the Steel Wells. Look for them on Facebook, and
or on Next Big Sound.
Sure.
You can track their plays.
That's true. And the Steel Wells, they're a very good band. The singer is a guy in the singles ward here, and they've got one other LDS guy. That's just how a lot of the kids here know them. But they're a great band. They've got a good following. They've won a lot of awards in the region for best new band and this and that. So I want to give them the twin bump. They are definitely worthy of it. And they're a good live band. They don't just have good recordings. They are a great live band. So.
Well, very well.
So there's that. And I was talking with girlfriend about this the other day, that if they were in Provo, they would be like the house band for Velour. It's that kind of thing. They would just, everyone in Provo would worship them like unto a deity.
They should go on a road trip, a tour.
If you will. Yes, I will. That's going to be our show, everybody. I think we're done now. How are you feeling?
Sounds good.
So, everyone, once again, thank you for listening in. Thanks for being here with us. We have a wonderful time. And please, once again, don't forget to send us your questions or comments or ideas for any topics. If there's stuff that we miss, we'd really love that. We're going to do like the old Dirty Jobs pitch. Please give us things to talk about at contact at thisweekinmormons.com or post stuff on the webpage, whatever you want. We'd definitely love your feedback or any ideas or anything that we're missing. It's always a pleasure to interact with you, get your feedback for the shows. So it's been a good week. Thank you, Ukraine. This is definitely the Ukrainian week, so.
Slava Vodu.
Whatever the heck that means. I know how, but I can say do pobachenya.
All right.
Like very much American. Do pobachenya. Молодец.
See you, Jeff.
Al Doan, goodbye, sir.
Goodbye.
And that's going to be it for us, everybody. So once again, be true to yourself. This has been another This Week in Mormons. Ciao.